This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. Welcome back, guys. We are now on episode 17 of the Real Talk with Dana podcast. And today I have a really special guest on because this is a topic where I have absolutely zero expertise. Today we're going to be talking all about keto and intermittent fasting. So I've brought on my good friend Sean Minar from the Keto for Women show, who is obviously an expert in all things keto for women. So we're not only going to be talking about why keto is so different for women than it is for men, we're also going to be talking about keto for athletes, for thyroid, PCOS, adrenal autoimmune disorders, and we're also going to be talking about a bunch of your burning questions about why you need to approach keto with the right mindset to have success, when you may need to modify your keto food choices based on your lifestyle, and most importantly, Sean is talking about how listening to your body is absolutely necessary when trying keto to figure out how it's going to work for you and your goals and figuring out the right balance of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates for you, which is going to be different than it is for the next person. So I hope you guys love this episode and let me know what you think. Let's get started. Guys, I would love to welcome Sean to the podcast today. She has a kick-ass podcast called Keto for Women, and you may have heard me say this before, but I am by no means an expert at keto, so I figured I would bring Sean in here to talk about keto and answer all of your questions. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Dana. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. Mostly, well, not mostly. I guess it's really cool because we were saying before we got on, we have so many mutual friends that I feel like I've known you for a really long time, even though we've never actually like met in person or spoken directly.
I know. I really feel like that's the case with so many of my friends because of the social media world. It's like I have friends, but I've never even seen their faces in person.
Yeah, it's so funny. Okay, so for people who aren't really familiar with you, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and health background? Like, how did you get where you are today?
My story and health background could take about 4 hours, but I will try to keep this really simple. So I am a holistic nutritionist. I am in Boulder, Colorado, although my practice is basically worldwide at this point. But I came to all of this, and I guess I should say I specialize in ketogenic diets for women. And I came to all of this because of my own health issues, which so many of us as nutrition practitioners do. I think all of us probably to some degree. And it started actually by me transitioning to a paleo diet back about 6.5, 7 years ago. And this was in response to being diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is an autoimmune disease. And, you know, for a few years, I was okay with just taking what the doctor was telling me to take, doing what he was telling me to do, which was like nothing, and just kind of letting it be. But my symptoms weren't really getting better. Like things weren't really improving. And I just had this like intuitive sense that I could be doing more. I could be doing something different. And by nature, I'm someone that like constantly wants to like dig and find the answer and keep going. So I just, that's basically what I did, especially after I went to one particular doctor's appointment. He was like, here's your pills. You're going to be on these 9 pills for the rest of your life. Like, just take it. And I was like, isn't what I'm eating, especially because this is a digestive disorder, doesn't this, what I'm eating have something to do with it? He was like, no, nothing to do with your diet. Just leave my office.
He said no. Oh my God. I actually, I had the exact same experience before I got diagnosed with celiac. And that was the whole reason that I started playing around with my food because, you know, I went to all these doctors and they're like, nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. Take these pills, like leave my office, same kind of thing. And then it's like, I literally have a digestive autoimmune disorder and you're telling me what I'm eating doesn't matter. Like, how does that make any sense?
I know. So off. It's just crazy. Luckily, I finally didn't believe it, you know, and the same thing for you. Like, finally, it's like, I'm just going to try. So that night I just Googled and found that there were so many people who would actually reverse out of their autoimmune, their ulcerative colitis specifically, with a paleo diet. So literally the next day I cleaned out my cupboards, cleaned out my fridge, went paleo. Like, it was that easy because it meant that much to me to try to heal this and to get off the medication.
Yeah, definitely.
So that worked. It definitely helped quite a bit, a lot less symptoms. I was able to reduce my medication and even get off for a period of time. But I was still kind of on this wavering, like sometimes I was good, sometimes I wasn't. I was still having these flare-ups with my autoimmune disease. And then things, but I will say, before I move on, I will say I felt a lot better, like energy-wise, my workouts were great, like sleep was great, just everything was really kind of matching up. And then started to not match up. So just things started to fall one by one, and just having all of these weird health issues that didn't make sense, like intense brain fog to the point where I couldn't recollect words, like the names of like computer. I wouldn't know what that was, which was kind of scary. And intense fatigue, some pretty significant weight gain over a matter of a few months that I hadn't changed anything to warrant. And so, you know, things just started really falling for no reason. And I couldn't understand why. I was still eating paleo. I was still working out. I was detoxifying my entire life, all this stuff that I know to do, because at this point I was a nutritionist and nothing was changing. And so basically lots more digging. Like I said, I'm a digger. So I just kept on going to practitioner after practitioner, doctor after doctor, test after test. Finally figured out that it was actually due to toxic mold exposure. So the home that I was living in was moldy, essentially, and I have a genetic predisposition, which makes my body unable to detoxify from that.
Damn,
and
okay.
So when you can't detoxify from that mold situation, it causes what's called chronic inflammatory response syndrome. CIRS is how it's known. And basically your body just inflames because it doesn't really know what else to do. It doesn't know how else to cope with that. And so that's where all of these kind of random symptoms were coming from, even to the point where your brain becomes inflamed, and like that's where the brain fog and memory loss comes in. So then lots of protocol necessary to go through the detoxification of that and all that stuff. And I found a specialized doctor and blah, blah, blah. But to me at this point, like I said, I was already in practice as a nutritionist. I knew about ketogenic diets. And it made sense to me that all of the symptoms I was having would at least be somewhat fixed to a degree to where I could maybe live a normal life by going keto. So it really just kind of clicked in with me and made tons of sense to try a keto diet and just see what would happen. And literally within 2 weeks, my entire life changed. Like, I actually got the life back that I thought I honestly had lost forever because I had gotten so sick. So it kind of like saved my life in a way, although that sounds really dramatic, but it really, really is true. And so since then, that was a year and a half ago, I've been keto the entire time. And I kind of fell into helping women because basically of my own mistakes. Like, I made some mistakes when transitioning to a ketogenic diet. And then I had clients that wanted to and was able to kind of learn from their experiences too. And I just found out that like I was following advice and they were following advice given to them by men. For men. And it's not the same. It's a totally different process. And so here I am. That was a really long story, but I tried my hardest.
No, that was a really good story. So I want to back up a little bit and just talk about what it's like, because I've been through this too, to experience such a severe health condition when you are a practitioner and trying to help people, because that's not something that's talked about a lot, right? Especially with social media now, and it's such a like highlight reel of people's lives. And you might think like, oh, you know, this girl's doing yoga like in the park, mm-hmm, and that she's drinking a green juice and, you know, all this stuff. And it might seem like everything is so perfect from the outside, but unless you put it out there that you're going through this struggle, like I'm sure you did, mm-hmm, and you're honest with people, then it's really, I mean, it's hard to come to terms with that, you know, you're trying to help other people and they always say, you know, take care of yourself first. But sometimes it's so hard to do that when you're going through such a health, I guess, scare, you could call it.
Totally. Yeah. And that was a really hard thing for me. And at the time, I was actually kind of part personal trainer, because that was my past life, and part nutritionist. So I was still seeing clients and telling them how to, quote unquote, get fit. But then here I was gaining weight, and they didn't understand why I was gaining weight. And I really didn't understand why I was gaining weight. And so, like, that physical, like, I had to really get over that, because, you know, spending 10 years in the fitness industry, you're kind of conditioned to be like, oh, you have to look a certain way. So that went out the window, thank goodness. But it is hard. And I will say that I never shied away from telling it like it is. Like, I'm stuck in bed today. I don't feel good. I literally went to bed right after I woke up because I'm so sick. And the thing is, I was kind of hesitant to do so when I first started getting sick. But then as soon as I saw the reaction of the followers and my friends and my clients, it's just, you understand that people want reality. They want realistic expectation of what they can expect, of what is going on with you. And that, I think, really helped me gain trust in people. And, you know, I have clients, and I just got off the phone with one who was like, you know, crying basically at how she's feeling. And I was like, I've totally been there. I know how you're feeling. I promise it's going to get better. You know, so she was like, she could connect with that, and I could connect with her to know that there's kind of more to the story and that I've been through it.
Right.
So I think being able to do that is so, so important, and not trying to pretend like everything's perfect, because nobody has everything perfect ever, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's so much easier to be empathetic with people, and not only for you to be empathetic with them, but for them to understand that you are coming from a place where you can be empathetic with them because you've been through it. And I've found, I mean, even just with, you know, I've been doing this podcast for what, 16 episodes now. The more that I open up about stuff, the more people are willing to open up and ask questions and share their stories and stuff. And it's just so powerful. And I think there's a huge void of where there are so many people that are in, I mean, I don't know if I want to say like powerful positions, right? But influential positions, I guess, whether it's through social media or podcasts. And they just, they're kind of, the missing piece is that they're not opening up enough in order to connect with people. So I'm really appreciative that you do that with people.
I think it's huge. I think it's so important.
Yeah.
And it helps people to understand, like, for me, I always talk about the mold situation when I'm talking about it with anybody, because a lot of people don't even know that's what they're dealing with right now. And it's huge. So I get so much connection based on that. And I help people figure out, like, oh, this could be something I'm dealing with.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's really important too, just the education piece of it. And if I just left that all to myself, nobody would ever know.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's get back to talking about keto, I guess, since keto, that is what this podcast is about. So let's see, what would you say the biggest misconceptions about keto are in general?
Oof, a
like
lot.
Like men or women?
Yeah, in general, I think that keto, well, and I think probably most people listening to this podcast are probably well-versed in like paleo. Maybe they have seen a little bit about keto. So you probably can see that there is this kind of space where keto is seen as in a very negative light. So that's where the misconceptions come from. And that would be kind of that it's harmful to your body, to your health, that you're doing damage, that you're not supposed to be in ketosis. It's a bad state to be in. It's not natural to your body. I'm just basically just, I could spew all of these off. But also, as far as what your plate of food looks like, that you're only eating bacon and cheese and butter, which is also not the case.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I mean, I have never eaten more vegetables in my life, even compared to paleo. I'm eating more veggies than I do when I'm keto. So I think that's a really big one. And I would say specifically for women, it's more so about the hormones, and that it's going to wreak havoc on your hormones and you're going to miss your period and all that stuff. One of the big ones in both cases that I think needs to be touched on, and I am like a firm advocate in this, is that keto equals immediate, immense, sustained weight loss. Like that's, it happens to some people, yes. And it is, can be a really good place for people to lose some unhealthy weight if they need to, but should not be gone into with that thought that if you need to lose 10 pounds that you just happen to want to lose, that your body's going to shed it in a month as soon as you go keto. Like, it doesn't happen. And when people think that because of these random stories out there and what they've heard, they get really discouraged and really disappointed because that's not what it's about.
Yeah. And they probably then, I mean, if they're looking at it from that way, like if that's their goal going into it, they probably do it in the incorrect way and they make all these mistakes. And then that's the people mm-hmm. where you see the hormonal imbalances, you lose your period, there's all these nutrient deficiencies. I mean, it's the same as any, like you can do paleo super wrong. Like you can do Whole30 super wrong, right? If you don't go into it with the right mindset, it's just another diet.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I am a huge advocate of in the keto community, is that I don't want to call it a diet. I want to call it a lifestyle. And I don't want it to be something where that's your main focus, is how much weight can I lose and how quickly, which is where a lot of people come from, men and women come into keto from, in that mentality of like constant dieting and constant yo-yoing and what's the next quick fix. And I'm a firm believer that that's not the way to do keto safely and effectively and for your health. Big difference.
Yeah,
huge difference.
Definitely. Okay, so speaking of that, what do you see are some of the biggest mistakes that women in particular make when they try keto?
First of all, the biggest mistake is, well, there's a lot of them. I can't even say the biggest one. One of the biggest ones.
Some of the biggest ones.
Is that they're not actually in ketosis. They're not actually doing keto. They're doing a keto-like diet, which is actually just a low-carb diet. And that's not what a ketogenic diet is. Keto is high-fat, moderate protein, low-carb diet. So that's a big difference. And for you to take out your carbs, even if you're coming from a paleo template, if you take out your sweet potatoes and your berries and whatever to try to get low-carb and to go keto, and you add in maybe an extra scoop of coconut oil or like an extra half an avocado, that does not make it high fat. It makes it low carb. It makes it low food, which becomes hypocaloric. Sorry. And then you're just really, really doing a significant amount of damage to your body as a woman. Because as soon as you drop your calories too low, which is obviously a huge important point that I'm sure you've made on the podcast before. But when you drop your calories too low as a woman, then that's super stressful on your body. So your body's going to think of that as a stressful scenario, and stress is kind of that main ticket as to what keeps our hormones balanced, is our stress and cortisol levels and our adrenal health and all that stuff. So when you're not actually doing keto and you're just doing low carb, it gets stressful. Whereas if you actually bump your fat up enough, which is a lot, it is significantly more than you think it is. Like, especially when you're first starting and you're just trying to get into ketosis and produce those ketones, it is significantly higher than you think in order to get that process started. Then it becomes what I like to call this like body homeostasis. So like your body is really happy. It's really safe. It knows there's tons of energy. It has this really nice, easier form, or easier way to produce energy by producing ketones. And so then things can really start to heal and balance out, and you feel so good. Like, you feel so much better. So you can kind of feel that sense of body homeostasis. And that's the biggest difference between keto and low carb.
And just not eating food.
And just like, yeah, just eating all the veggies and a little bit of meat and calling it a diet, which is not good.
Which is what many people who have probably found our podcast had been doing in the past.
Yes, right. Exactly. That is the biggest thing that I see is, you know, you're just putting a lot of stress on your body when you're trying to do this. And this is why I now have a course, and this is what I teach for women, is like that transition is really important, and making sure you're actually getting to that point of producing ketones is huge. The other big thing that I see is basically someone listening to this today that's eating carbs, even if they're eating like, you know, like I said, paleo style carbohydrates, then decide tomorrow to go keto. If you're a woman and you make that decision and you have one day is this and the next day is that, again, super stressful on the body. So it really, really helps women to take that transition slowly. I've seen a lot of great results, and this is what I do in my class, by spending 3 to 4 weeks to get into a ketogenic state, to alter those macronutrients to the point that it needs to be so that you're producing ketones. So you take a few weeks to lower your carbs, you take a few weeks to increase your fat, you find out what that moderate protein is for you, because it's different for everybody. And you just have this education too. You have this whole piece where you're learning about your body. And I think that makes a huge difference. So take it a step. I know we all want to get to ketosis as soon as humanly possible, but it really helps to take it slower. Like it will pay off immensely. And you'll have less keto flu, which is really nice. So that's another big one. And I would say, let's see, the last one, again, going back to that mentality. So I really, really try to tell women to find a bigger reason why. So instead of it just being about the diet, wanting to change their body, wanting to weigh less on the scale, blah, 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 all those things that we hear. And I get it. I mean, it's a thing. It's out there. But there has to be another reason. And to know how great being in a ketogenic state is for your body and your health and what you're trying to heal and balance out, when you understand that, then you have this bigger purpose. So there's another reason why, like, I want to balance my hormones. I want to decrease my stress level. I want to get rid of the bloating I feel after every meal. You know, there can be some other reasons to why you're trying to change and what you're trying to do for your health, both now and in the future, that just get a better mentality around it before you start in.
Yeah, definitely. Those are all great points. I'm really glad you said those, because the limited experience that I have, not personally working with people that have done keto, but just like friends that have tried it out and then they've asked me about it, it's just like, you know, they're coming from the diet mentality and they're already in a really stressful situation, and then they try to do keto, so it's like harder for them to get into it, and then they're just like not eating any food. And they're like, oh, keto doesn't work for me. I'm like, but first of all, do you even know if you were in ketosis? Or
right.
Like, why are you doing this in the first place? You know, because I know for a couple of them, it definitely was just like a weight loss fix, and they were eating like all the cheese and all the butter and all the bacon, which like is fine if you balance that out with veggies and other things in your diet. But if that's the majority of your energy intake, it's probably not going to do you any favors.
Yeah, well, and it's just, that doesn't even sound good to say. I mean, like, yeah, it's fun to eat bacon and cheese and whatever, but at some point it's just like, okay, let's go back to eating like really amazing food.
Exactly.
And just increasing the fat content in like way better ways. And I really, just to bring this up really quickly, because that's something else I want to point out. A lot of people, when they go keto, they start just consuming a ton of dairy because it's quote unquote allowed on a ketogenic diet. And I mean, there are people that do fine with dairy, but there are a lot of people that don't. And it's a pretty inflammatory food, especially if you're not getting a super high quality source. So that's something to consider too, is, you know, if you're doing keto and you're in a ketogenic state and you're testing your ketones, so you know that and all that stuff, but you're not getting any benefits from it, you might just need to cut out the dairy. But yeah. Just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that might be the same situation with the keto-friendly sweeteners, right? Like if you, I mean, sugar is sugar, right? Like if you're going from standard American diet and then you go to paleo and all you eat is maple syrup and coconut sugar, like it's still spiking your blood sugar. And I don't know the specific effects it has on your blood sugar when you're doing like the erythritol and xylitol in the keto sweeteners. But I mean, you shouldn't be recreating sweets just to make them keto every single day. Even if they are keto, that doesn't mean it's necessarily healthy to be eating treats every day.
Yeah, well, and they do, to for some people, especially if you have a sensitive blood sugar, they will cause a blood sugar spike as well. So definitely something to consider. But also, one of the best benefits about going ketogenic, and this was something I felt almost immediately, and I was like, oh my God, I had no idea this could ever happen to me, is you like lose your sweet tooth.
Oh, wow.
Like your sweet cravings just totally change. They just, it's the craziest thing. Like I was having a few bites of sweet potato today, because yes, I do eat carbs, even though I'm keto.
We can talk about that.
But I was like, man, like this almost tastes like candy. It's so sweet. And so if you're continuing to put you know, all the stevia and all the erythritol and all that stuff into your diet, you're never going to experience that benefit. And it's one of the best feelings to be free of those like cravings and that mentality. And, you know, women love experiencing that. My gosh, I just had a chocolate cake and I didn't want it kind of situation. So,
yeah. Okay. So it's important. Who would you say that keto works best for? And then I know there are bound to be some populations of people that you probably wouldn't recommend that they try keto right now, given their, whether it's a relationship with food and their body's issue, whether it's like a health condition. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly truly believe that being keto and being in a ketogenic state is safe and effective and a really good place for majority of people, like vast majority of people. It truly is a lot safer than some kind of naysayers make it out to be. Like there's tons of research now, more and more coming out every day. Like it's becoming a hot topic, which is nice in a good way. So we're kind of able to see that there's not any of these safety concerns that we have heard in the past, which is great. I will say specifically those that I think as far as female would be great to try a healthy, balanced, nourishing ketogenic diet, which let's talk about what that means. Like I said, all of those kind of things that I mentioned before about taking the time to transition in and making sure you're getting enough food. You've got to eat enough food. That's one of the biggest things that's hard to overcome in the keto space because there's a lot of people telling you to fast, like you're not supposed to eat breakfast. And then you're supposed to not be hungry for 7 hours. So you don't have to eat only once a day. And it's not true. If you are someone that is female specifically, but this could be the case for men too, and looking to heal something, then your body needs to know that it's safe and that it's nourished and that there's plenty of micronutrients available. So you need to eat enough food and you need to eat enough good, high quality, nutrient dense foods. So organic veggies, grass-fed, grass-finished meats, pasture-raised meats and eggs and all that stuff. So I can get into that, but we know that stuff. So if you can do that, give yourself enough food, get into a ketogenic state where you feel really good, then that is a great place for women who, have adrenal health issues, which could then kind of equate to hormonal imbalances further down the road, like estrogen dominance. PCOS is a non-negotiable. If you are someone who has PCOS, ketogenic has actually been studied and proven to be a healing diet for that purpose.
Yeah, because it's an insulin resistance problem.
Yes. Exactly. Totally. So you can peel your blood sugar, you can reverse PCOS. Or just amenorrhea. Like if you don't have a period at all, if maybe your hormones are kind of all over the place or you're not producing enough, then I've had so many women get their periods back by going through my program. So that's really important. And thyroid issues. And I know like a lot of naysayers again out there will say that keto is not good for the thyroid. But I've had a lot of people be able to balance their thyroid hormones. If it's Hashimoto's or, you know, if it's any autoimmune disease, really, but we're talking thyroid right now, super great for that to really get those antibodies down. But like I said, same thing for other autoimmune diseases. I have a ton of ladies in my class that are able to put their diseases into remission by going keto in this safe way. Again, any mental health issues, even if it's just even if it's like depression, anxiety, something like that, Alzheimer's, it's actually, again, proven to in studies to be a great spot to be for those kinds of patients.
Well, isn't that what keto was first used for mental health disorders like autism and schizophrenia and all of that kind of stuff as a therapeutic diet?
Yep. Originally, it was epilepsy. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then now it's obviously progressed. But again, if we're looking at blood sugar stuff, like Alzheimer's is kind of being called type 3 diabetes. So again, it's a blood sugar issue. And if we can manage that from the start, we can reverse some of the effects of that as well. So there's a ton of stuff that is so great. And really, I think the only people that should consider waiting, and maybe it's not the right time, would be those, again, like you mentioned, that maybe have current eating disorders, past eating disorders, not in the right mindset to have this not be a quick fix, not in the or, you know, the next thing to try and restrict and worry about their food more. If you can get into a headspace where that's a thing of the past and you truly want to heal your body, then you could get there. But right now we just need those people to eat and enjoy their food and find out what works for them and not worry about any sort of specific calculations or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. Because I know that is a population that I work a lot with, and not with my clients specifically, but with other people who, you know, maybe they haven't acknowledged that they do have a disordered eating pattern or something like that, but this is just the next big thing that they want to try. So then they try keto, which, you know, can be good in the sense that it's getting them to eat more fat, right? So that's mm-hmm. a good thing.
Yes.
But then they're just like, oh, this is another excuse to restrict all of my carbohydrates just so it's something that I can control. And then they go from there and they're like, oh, I'm just going to intermittent fast, which like can be a really slippery slope to just, you know, skipping meals and not getting enough mm-hmm. nutrients and all of that kind of stuff. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about intermittent fasting.
Big thing I see. First, before we talk intermittent fasting, I want to go back to what you said, because what has happened is we used to have this fat fear, right? Like we were told fat was bad and never eat fat and all this stuff. And now that's kind of dissolving, thank goodness, right? But then we get into this keto space and now it's like carbs are the devil. Like people freak out.
Yeah, we always have to demonize a macronutrient.
Something. It's crazy. It's crazy. And yeah, you're going to eat less carbs, and that's what you need to do to maintain a ketogenic state. But depending on who you are and your past blood sugar issues and what you're trying to heal in your body and your workouts, I mean, there's so many different factors. They're not the devil. You can still have them. Like I said, I just had some sweet potato for lunch and it's fine. But again, it's all kind of finding out what works for you and doing kind of your own research on yourself and what makes you feel the best, especially as far as carbohydrate intake goes. But the fact that people literally think they can't ever have a piece of fruit again is sad. Like, that's really sad because it's about to be summer. There's a lot of really good fruit and I'm going to be having some, right? So that's one of the things that I have to teach to my women, and is just to back out of anything being off limits. Like, we just don't need that to be the case. It makes it, again, in this diet realm, instead of like, this is my lifestyle, which means sometimes I'm going to have fruit and sometimes I'm going to have sweet potatoes. Sometimes I'm going to have a cupcake because I want it. Like, it's fine. Everything's fine. I'm still going to be alive the next day, hopefully.
Unless like the zombie apocalypse hits on the same day that you have that cupcake. And then you might not be alive the next day.
Have a problem. But at least I ended my life with a cupcake.
Right, exactly.
So that's the one thing I just wanted to touch on really quickly. And then as far as the intermittent fasting goes, man, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough subject, to be honest, because on one hand, there's a lot of great benefits to fasting, to health benefits. Some really great things have happened. Honestly, I had to use fasting a few times in my own health journey in order to get my health back and restored. So I totally think it's a great resource to have available. I think there's too many people, women specifically, adding in fasting before their body is ready, or without the right purpose. Again, because they think, oh, if I eat one less meal, then I'm eating less food and then I'm going to lose weight. Like, no, I mean, to be honest, when I fasted, I barely lost any weight because that's not what it was about. It was about a life's change, basically a health change that I had to make, that my body had to make to get there. So I think, you know, if we can approach fasting with that more therapeutic kind of mentality and doing it when you have something specific that needs to be a part of your journey to heal, then we would be great. Or if it happens supernaturally, like if you are just honestly really full from lunch, you had this like amazing, super nutrient dense, tons of fat lunch, and you just want to have like a snack or you know, maybe a coffee not coffee, but tea, because it's nighttime.
Coffee at 9 p.m.
Maybe like a tea with coconut oil or something in it for dinner, then I could see that maybe being okay and something that just naturally happens. But if it doesn't come naturally, if it feels forced, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, I'm not seeing a lot of women who have tanked their health from trying to fast when it wasn't the right time for their body. Because again, we talk about that stress thing situation again. Not feeding your body is a stress. Even if you're in a ketogenic state, not having that those micronutrients come in, and the macronutrients too for that matter, coming in on a regular basis is going to freak your body out. So we want to try to avoid that as women as much as possible, because we already are, we freak out about everything else. Like, we're already kind of freaked out all the time, right?
Yeah,
it's always. Just how, yeah, it's just we're stressed out by nature, especially in this 2018 world.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Don't even get me started on this year. Yeah. But yeah, so I really like your point that, you know, intermittent fasting can be used as a really good tool sometimes, you know, as a therapeutic measure, or, you know, if you've just had a really nutrient dense food, but like, it's not something, especially if you're trying to do extended fasts, it's not something you should be doing every day, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to sacrifice the nutrient density. It's another stress on your body. It can be a slippery slope to just skipping meals, and like, that's not healthy either. So.
Yeah. And, you know, just something that's really interesting that I just thought of when you said that is, for me, I sometimes would eat like a few too many cookies or something back in the day, but I've never been had much of like a binge tendencies. And then when I started fasting, I started having these like binge episodes.
Oh, okay.
Because of fasting. So that's something else to consider, is like, what is that going to do to you mentally? How is that going to change your relationship with food? Even if it's something that you've never had to have an issue with in the past. So again, you really have to kind of weigh the positives and negatives. And I'll just tell you that it's not, if you do lose weight, again, it's a quick fix scenario. It's not something that's because you healed your entire body and now you're at this healthy weight. So you still have to consider that and do it again for that health purpose.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's talk about how, because I know you said you eat carbs. Let's talk about how we can modify keto so it still works for like a large group of people. Because so I have a few friends that have been doing keto for a while, and it was working really, really well for them when they weren't training because they were injured, or they were just doing like 2 days of CrossFit a week. So like, mm-hmm. not that much glycolytic demand or anything. But then since they bumped it up to 5 or 6 times a week, they haven't really changed their food intake at all. If you can mm-hmm. tell, I'm not working with them. But like, what do they need to do in order to feel better? Because they've started to feel like a big dip in their performance.
Yeah. So I think that's the key right there, is that if you are an active person and you notice that your workouts aren't what they used to be, or aren't what you want them to be, or you're not making the gains that you want, then it's time obviously to look at your food intake. And so the cool thing about people that are, most people, I'm not going to say all, but in general, if you are super active and you eat a ketogenic diet, then you are most likely going to be able to add a decent amount of carbohydrates and stay in ketosis. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. It's really actually super nice. And I am someone, you know, very similar to what you were saying with your friends, where I started increasing the amount of glycolytic activity that I was doing recently. And so now I'm just adding more carbs, and I'm not being super rigid about it, or making sure I measure so I know the grams or anything like that. I do not promote counting anything on a ketogenic diet. I know it's hard, but there are other ways to know that you're keto besides counting your macros. But just as it feels necessary, like after a workout, before a workout, you know, kind of that surrounding type thing. Or if you just feel tired, it might be okay. Now, the only thing to make sure is that just because you're adding more carbs doesn't mean the rest of your day should be less keto. You know, so you still have to really make sure that you, those fats are as high as they should be. Your protein's still moderated. And a lot of athletes or, you know, even people that work out fairly regularly can increase their protein as well and still stay in a ketogenic state and get the benefits of that repair situation going on there. So, you know, it just takes a little bit of tinkering, I guess, like just figuring it out for yourself. And you'll know, that's the beauty about the workout situation, is you know, like, okay, that workout sucked versus okay, now I feel better.
Yeah.
Because I had a sweet potato last night.
Yeah,
exactly. It is. It's super quick. You can feel the difference pretty quickly. And like I said, most people will still stay in a ketogenic state. And really, like, that's what I would say is the goal is to find your sweet spot where you're keto. Maybe you get out of ketosis for a couple hours or something when you have those carbohydrates, but then you transition right back in. Like, to have that metabolic flexibility when you are an athlete, especially, and you need that glucose, is just so cool. It's such a cool thing to experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. I also love, so I was listening to one of your Keto in the Hot Seat episodes.
Yeah.
I guess that was just a couple ago. And somebody asked about, like, how much protein should I be eating, like, to build strength? They're like, first of all, I can't tell you, because there's like no, and same thing for carbs. Like, I can't tell you exactly how many grams of protein or exactly how many carbs you have to eat. And you were like, honestly, if you're not gaining muscle, just eat more food and you will gain muscle. Like,
totally,
I guarantee
right?
it.
It's so true. Like, it doesn't even really matter what it is. Just eat more food.
Yeah. As long
as
it's
not
shitty food.
Like, if you want to gain muscle. Yeah, exactly. It's really that easy. But yeah, I mean, it's actually funny how many times I say, I don't know. Like, people ask me specific questions and I just say, I don't know. And it's because I'm not you. You have to be your own advocate for your health. And this is what I preach, and this is what I really empower women to do, is you have to find out what works for you. And so I don't know your ketone readings. I don't know how many carbs you had. I don't, you know, like, there's way too many variables. I don't know how you feel. But the end result is that we all just want to feel really good, right? Like, as much a part of the day as we can, feeling amazing. And so that means finding out the best ratios of the food that works for you, and like getting good sleep and getting good workouts and all that stuff that comes into feeling amazing. You have to use all of that as information as to what type of diet works best for you. If you are truly ketogenic and you've tested your ketones and you've been in it, you've get it, I'd say 3 months at least, and you don't feel good, then don't do it. You know?
Like, yeah. I'm glad you said that too, because I mean, the reason there are so many diets out there is because something different works for everyone.
Totally, totally. And you, at the end of the day, have to find something that makes you feel the best, but is also something that you can stick to. And that's another reason why I promote, I mean, I wouldn't say promote, but I don't care if you eat carbs or not, because for me, if I were to say I can never have carbs again, the only thing I want to eat is carbs.
Yeah.
Like, I will, like, pass the sweet potatoes in the grocery store and be really sad. But if I, you know, so just, like, removing that, like, again, removing the can'ts out of any situation, and it becomes a lifestyle. It becomes something where it's like, yeah, if I want to go have a cupcake, I'm going to go have a cupcake, and I'm going to be fine unless the zombies come get me. But I will probably be okay. And it's another day. And that's what I really try to teach women who are coming from this thing where they just think there's always got to be some restriction in any sort of plan that they do. And there isn't. Like, there are, you can do whatever works for you, whatever makes you feel the best, and have carbs when you want to have carbs.
I love that. That's great. That'd be great. Have carbs when you want to have carbs. But no butter, because apparently butter's a carb if you listen to Mean Girls.
That's true. No butter.
Oh, my God.
I mean, butter is an amazing keto food. Let's just say that.
Oh, man. Okay, so I know we talked about athletes, and we briefly touched on before, like, autoimmune disorders and thyroid stuff and Hashimoto's. So if people are coming to keto and they have some kind of pre-existing, like, PCOS or thyroid hormone imbalances or amenorrhea, like, is there a way that they need to modify keto in the sense that they need to make sure they're getting in – certain nutrients or like certain foods to help with the transition and so that their hormones don't go out of whack?
No. The only thing that needs to happen is kind of those things I talked about where you're eating enough food, you're making sure, because that's the biggest thing just for women in general. Women in general aren't eating enough food.
Fact.
You agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, just eat more food.
Yeah.
And you will feel so much better. It's amazing what happens when you actually provide the energy and the nutrients that your body is requesting.
Yeah.
It's that
and
easy.
I actually, I was just talking to my friend Christina, who I did a podcast on metabolic damage with her 2 weeks ago and last week, I guess. But so she's taking her like exit exam for our master's program in nutrition. And one of the questions was, at what caloric intake is there a risk of not getting adequate nutrient density every day, of like not hitting the RDAs basically?
Yes.
Which are a minimum to begin with,
right?
And the like answers were like 2200 calories, 2000, 1800, or 1300, and you would assume that the answer would be like 1300 because there's no way you can fulfill all of your nutrient requirements under that. But the answer was actually 1,800 calories a day. So, like, if you're going under 1,800 calories as a woman, this isn't talking about men, then you're at risk of not getting all of the nutrients that your body needs every day for a baseline level, not even
absolute
for optimal
minimum
health.
Right. And that's right. Exactly. And for many of us listening, we want optimal health, right? Like, we want to feel as good as we possibly can, not just baseline. So that's going to take more.
Yeah. And no one goes into keto being like, I want to feel shitty.
Exactly. Right. Yet they are doing it all the ways that they can to feel shitty. But I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, yeah. And like, that doesn't even include any sort of physical activity beyond that you're doing and all the depletion that happens with that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just blows my mind how little women eat. So first of all, just eat enough food. And if you're going keto, make it keto friendly foods, and keep the nutrient density going with that. Don't start decreasing your veggies just because you're starting to be concerned about carbs. Veggies and carbs and veggies are totally fine. Like, you're going to be fine. And then take it slow. So do the slow approach, especially with adrenal, thyroid, hormonal imbalances. Definitely take that slow approach and give yourself 3 or 4 weeks to actually get into a ketogenic state. Test your ketones. Find out what level you feel best at. I think that's really an important thing for women to do without getting obsessed about it. And other than that, you should be good. I mean, that's really, I would say, the adrenal, thyroid, autoimmune, PCOS situation. Those are probably the biggest client populations that I have. And they all see amazing results when it's done in the right approach.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so I just have a couple of fun questions to
Yay.
Close out with. So what are some of your favorite keto foods? Like you.
Yes, me personally, I am a huge fan of all like mayos and sauces and dressings. And this, I don't know, people like don't think about that when they're trying to start adding more fats. And it's the easiest
they're
possible
so
way.
Tasty.
They're so good. Like, why would you not want to smother your salad with tons of ranch dressing?
I would say about 25%. That might be an over-exaggeration, but I have a lot of recipes with ranch myself.
Yes, yes, because it's so good. Yeah, so make your own mayo, make your own ranch, other sauces like bechamel or hollandaise, all that stuff. They're so fatty in a very nutrient-dense way if you're making it yourself. And yeah, so I always have mayo, and I sometimes I put like garlic in it or chipotle in it to make it a different flavor. And I always have ranch dressing because it
awesome.
Makes it. Yeah. But then I also obviously love bacon. That's a huge keto food, but I try not to have it every day because I gave myself a food sensitivity to pork.
Oh,
when I was
no.
Every day. So I have to limit my bacon, which is sad.
RIP
then,
bacon.
You know, another huge staple for me is I'm at like 90% or higher dark chocolate at this point. Huge. I'm actually kind of an addict to chocolate.
So my next question was going to be like, what's your favorite indulgence lately? And that was actually going to be mine because super dark chocolate. I don't,
yes.
I usually go for like 85%, but I've in the past couple of weeks, I'm like, okay, I'm on a mission to find my favorite dark chocolate. So I've bought like a bunch of different like 85 or 90% bars, and I'm like trying all of these different ones. I'm like, I look like a hoarder with all these chocolate bars. But it's just like, so now I know which ones are my favorite, and I don't have to waste money on ones that are like subpar.
Yes, at least exactly.
That's how it is in my head.
And it is really fun to taste test chocolate, like side by side compare.
Yeah.
So fun. The only thing I would tell you to add to that to make it even more indulgent is the Artisana cashew butter.
Oh my gosh.
Put that on as like frosting. It is so good. That's my indulgence.
That
for
sounds
sure.
amazing.
It's like, oh, I can't even explain it. It's so delicious.
I love cashew butter so much.
And it's like slightly sweet and like frosting type texture.
Yeah.
Oh, it's delicious.
It's perfection.
You got to try it.
Okay, awesome. So are there any big projects or things coming up that you're really excited about right now in your business?
Oh, gosh.
Or I guess in your personal life. It could be either way.
Yes. Well, in business, I have the Low Carb Cruise coming up in May that I will be speaking at, and then KetoCon in June that I'll be speaking at. So those are big things. And I am – oh, another big one. I have a retreat that I'm planning for my Fat Burning Female Project participants. So I'll have a retreat.
That is so cool.
I'm really excited about that. I just kind of finalized the details for that this week. So that's fun. And then personally, I just bought up my own first house. So I'm
oh my God, congrats.
Yeah, kind of a big deal. I was kind of a little bit unexpected too. So, and it happened really fast.
Oh my God, adulting so hard.
That was meant to be. Yeah. So I have a lot going on as usual, but that's how I like it to be.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast today. I feel like you squashed a lot of the BS that's out there. And I just wanted to say, I really admire your drive as an entrepreneur and your passion for squashing all of the BS about keto and stuff that's out there, because I feel like the nutrition community really needed it. I mean, you said like, you know, when you first started doing keto, it was all like information from men for men, which like keto does work really well for men if you just follow the strict guidelines. But I think it's so important to have a whole nother avenue, like a whole podcast specifically just about how women need to do this differently from men. So I appreciate it.
Important. Yes. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So guys, if you want to check out how to do keto the right way, then you need to go check out Shawn and her Keto for Women podcast. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.